Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Don Rose of U.S. Commodities from West Des Moines, Iowa, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and buy your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, an all-day event in Normal, Illinois. Should be a great program, and you won't want to miss it. Find the details at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. Tickets are just $35. Don't wait. Buy them right now. Now let's turn our attention directly to what's happened in Chicago for the week and get a list of items that we ought to talk about. Merrill Crowley, I think I'll start with you. What's on your list today?
Oh, I guess I'd like to discuss a little bit about whether or not we have more downside to these markets. I know that's not the most positive, but if we all agree that we were there, I guess that's a good look towards the upside. And how that would work into your marketing, what types of rally you might see and how you might be able to attain better prices next year.
Don Rose of U.S. Commodities.
Yeah, I think when I look, I'd like to kind of discuss a little bit the carries in the market from a producer standpoint. If they have on-farm storage, how do you utilize that to your advantage, and how do you improve your bottom line through that? Also, from end users, what are some methods that can be used to lock in these prices if you can't get the cash market bought with reluctant farm sellers?
And Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think the biggest thing for me, along with the cash carry in the marketplace and how to lock that in, and I also want to focus on revenue per acre, given some of the yields in our area have been better than expected, at least from a bean side, but also even some to a corn side, and focusing more on that strictly than looking at prices that may be disappointing to the producer.
And finally, Mike Zuzlo.
I guess the big thing I wanted to talk about, Todd, was with the other fellows here was, you know, we're pretty much dead in the water versus last month in the soybeans and in the crude oil. But we've had a real charge up in the livestock markets. And I'm wondering if that's not pointing maybe the lead to where the grains are headed here and walking a lot of corn off the fields, and see what the others think about that.
Let's start there, Mike. Is there enough domestic livestock to walk a bunch of this grain off of the field?
The eagerness by the feeder cattle ranchers out here and the replacement ranchers out here is very strong right now. And it makes sense because, you know, we're running $50 a hundred weight higher than last year in the 5-weight feeders. And we're running feeder pigs about double the price of last year. So that shows you that there's a lot of demand out there, a lot of pent-up demand, and a lot of anecdotal telephone conversations and emails that I get talking about how does this work, can I budget this through, and because I've got good corn yields and I've got a recovery in my pasture, can I come in and work, make this work? And you know, this is where we're up 15% in hogs versus a month ago. We're up 3-5% in cattle and feeders, Todd, and that's with 4% more beef production, 5% more cattle on feed right now, and 2.5% more pork production. So I do feel like that while the market is ultra focused on the exports and the currencies and how those two interact with each other, we're silently building some significant demand base. And I think it's kind of similar to what we were in mid-2000s, and I'd be eager to hear what the others have to think.
Don Rose, let's follow up with that, because you did mention you wanted to talk a bit about how end users, and I'm assuming both ethanol producers and livestock producers, might be able to take advantage of these prices and some of the options they might have if they actually can't get producers to make the sales. What are your suggestions?
Well, you know, I think when you look at it, Todd and guys, is, you know, overall, you know, the livestock margins have moved up significantly, as Mike was talking about. And, you know, but if you don't have the product locked in, you're only one arm tackling the market. So when you look at it, there's no doubt the basis is probably wider than it is historically in a lot of areas. The carries in the market out to July is probably wider than it historically is. You have almost a 30-cent carry from Dece to July. So, you know, the bottom line is you have to own the cash. And if you can get cash ownership, you have to protect it with these carries in the market. So from our standpoint, we think that you have to lock in July somehow. And if you want to look at risk to the upside and leave the upside open, we think you're left with buying like 390 July puts against July 350 puts. And maybe even if you don't mind more ownership, sell an extra 350 May put below it. So it's a little bit, you know, different than when we normally look at, you know, not selling calls above the market, maybe similar to what Mike said, is because you want to leave the upside open in case of weather problems, in case funds want to ownership in commodities. Commodities look cheap compared to the equity market, and I think that's the key. So, but end users, no doubt, should lock in the their usage down at these levels, and I think all the way out to the summer. But you don't want to pay those big carries in the market. So that's a method that I think makes some sense.
So Don and Mike, I want to stay with both of you for just a second. There will be some differences from the eastern to the western side of the Corn Belt. More end users actually on the eastern or the western side of the Corn Belt. Livestock certainly, ethanol plants as well, larger plants in our side of the Corn Belt. Are there differences, Mike or Don? And maybe Mike, we'll start with you in the way you might deploy your marketing strategies for those end users from one side of the belt to the other?
Yeah, great question. I think Don alluded to it. If you've got a 70 under basis right now in corn, I think you want to work as hard as you possibly can on getting the feed side, the cash feed, and the corn side locked in if you can with your elevator or with your feed mill. And even if that means you have to pay a little bit of storage, but when you've got a Dece corn spread at 46 cents and a Dece July corn spread at 30 cents, you, like Don said, you don't want to buy the deferred markets. And it's the exact opposite mindset of if you own the corn and you're looking to sell it out of the field or store it in the bin and get ready to sell it. The thing that I've noticed is the idea that you can come in and buy the May, buy the July, to lock in your feed needs, Todd. I think that's probably not going to work very well in your break-evens and your budget. What I would recommend is treat this market like a fund or like an investment fund in terms of buy the front end and just keep rolling it with the idea that if the market doesn't rally, then if you buy December now, the March will collapse to the December when December goes into delivery or shortly after. There's that window of time where you can't play the market because you're in delivery, or you can, but you have to retender. But I think this is where a lot of education needs to be done because it can make a big difference in your break-evens as a livestock person.
Don, any follow-up on the question about, and I'll use the big word, arbitrage differences between the eastern Corn Belt and the western Corn Belt?
Well, you know, one thing about the western Corn Belt, no doubt, has a wider basis than the eastern Corn Belt. You know, we've got a tremendous amount of usage over here. I mean, Iowa alone, we account for 4 billion gallons. I'm sure people are aware of that, of the 15 billion gallons of production. So it's a big sucking sound over here. So how do you lock it in? I mean, the producer does not want to sell corn in the western Corn Belt at the elevator level, which I'd say on average is about 310 a bushel. So, if you know, you can try and pay up, but, you know, 10 or 15 cents doesn't even do it for him. So if you can't get it bought, you have to use some of the tricks in the market. What we've been looking at is would you take – it's the carries in the market are the problem. The basis is the problem for the end user if you can't get it bought. So some of the things that Mike was looking at is the carries are the problem. So what we've been doing is more so selling the May 350 corn put, saying, yeah, we will take ownership of futures at 350. And then we're going out and trying to buy some upfront March calls And then we're selling some July calls. For example, you can buy the March pretty cheap, the 360 calls, and you can sell the July 430 calls, and you sell the May 350 puts, and you don't get a lot invested if this market doesn't move, and at least you're doing something to help the carry situation and something from the flat price standpoint.
Okay, Merrill, let's turn this around and put it on the grain producer's side. You asked whether there was much in the way of downside yet for this marketplace. I'm going to make a leap of faith here and say that both Don and Mike, given where they stand with the end users, don't think that there's a lot of downside risk. What is your intention?
Well, I'd like to make a quick comment on the feed. A couple of my guys that are feeding out here are finding some pretty decent deals for the DDGs out here coming out of these ethanol plants. And with the usage of ethanol, there's quite a supply. And since we've lost, you know, China in the export market, there seems to be more of that available. Also, they're having good luck in booking their meal needs out farther out than normal. So there is some also there's some good opportunities in the cash market for your meal and your DDGs. Now, on the other side about downside, the thing that's bothered me about this whole rally that we saw is it just didn't seem like the basis nor the spreads participated in that, which leads me to be suspect on how high or whether or not this rally can continue up front. With corn, I think it's a little better news than with beans, because if corn were to go below the 343, it could drop as far as the 320 area or in about, and I don't want to see that happen. I'd love to see it hold, and I think if we can hold through this seasonal on the corn, because the seasonal is getting ready to turn to the downward side through, I think, November 24th. So if this corn price can hold, say, around the 343, 350 mark in through that time period, I think it'd be a good sign saying that the low is in the corn. Now, with the beans, it's should have been holding above the 980, 975 area, and it just hasn't done that. Next level would be 955. So I've pulled some of my long positions we've had in that, and we're looking to reset to them on some lower prices. Again, you know, with the beans, you're at least 70% through the harvest. Well, that kind of bodes well. Plus, this weather is starting to threaten the other 30% that's still in the field. So I think if we don't get these beans back above 980 quick, I think you need to seriously look at pricing and then trying to get some re-ownership at some lower levels. One of the suggestions I've got is a guy might be able to buy a 380 July put and sell the D's 420 call for about even, is about five and a half a cent cost. That would check below July 380 and give you a price opportunity to lock in 420 D's corn.
Brian Stark, you've been listening to the conversation. Anything that has struck you that you want to comment on?
Yeah, I like Mike's points on the carry. He speaks to the end user, and we've actually been focusing on the producer and how you take advantage of the carry in the market, because as the fund position is short and it starts to roll forward just like an end user position would, the corn curve, as we call it, starts to gravitate towards the lead month and gravitating lower, and so you end up losing that carry. So while guys are not attracted to the current price, one thing we've tried to produce or encourage producers that store a lot of grain is to sell the carry. And if you believe that there's upside, use a long call against that, which is very cheap. Volatility is very cheap on the long side right now. It's one way to play it. We've also encouraged them to look at D's 18 corn around $4. I mean, with a $2.4 billion carryout, without some sort of increased demand, which Mike did silently put towards the feed side. And I agree, if we're going to eat into this heavy carryout, it's probably going to have to come from the feed sector. But until that happens, you know, $4 corn tends to be a good starting point, I think, for the 18 bushels as well. So we're trying to encourage people to take advantage of the carry before the carry is taken out of the market, given the corn curve will probably gravitate March to the D's level, it goes off the board, May to the March, et cetera, as time goes on. So I think of the producer level, it's just the exact opposite of how we're speaking to the end user.
Okay, Brian, can you, if I'm a producer, can you talk me through it and teach me how to do this?
Sure. So today you've got about a 30-cent spread between December corn and July corn. So if I'm sitting here as a producer that's got bench storage, you know, go out and sell the carry hedging July corn at 380, and then potentially looking at replacing an at the money 380 or even slightly out of the money call for additional upside. It's a cheaper way, a safer way to play the long side. It locks in the carry for those storage bushels and allows the person to hedge it and wait for basis to appreciate into the summer.
So I'm going to sell a contract on the futures market or buy a contract on...
Or just create an HTA. Could be an HTA contract with your local grain elevator. Same type of thing. You could do it with a broker. You could do it with someone like the Andersons. You can hedge it as an HTA and then replace it with a call against that contract, turn it to a minimum price contract, and then allow upside rather than staying long those bushels in the bin and watching some of the carry in the corn market whittle away as the corn curve adjusts down. And when I say that, December corn, if it trades off at 350, you would assume March would do the same or gravitate to that point when March futures expire in March. So that's what we're trying to avoid losing and what we've been trying to encourage the producer with bench storage to do. And then even taking it a step further, when you look at the carryout that we have, 2.3, 2.4 billion projected, unless we see some bigger demand, feels like that's going to be kind of the similar number that we see carried in this year versus next September 1. So taking advantage of the 46-cent carry between this Dece and next Dece doing the same thing. Think about putting in some offers to hedge some December 18 futures via HTA for your 2018 production.
Merrill and Mike and Don, Merrill, maybe I'll start with you. It sounds like there's producers have to do a lot more work to market in low price eras than they do in high price eras. Is that right?
I would think so, yes. There's an article that came out in the Twitter, and maybe you saw it from Ed Essett, and he's talking about how you could get $4 corn. And it was kind of interesting, but yeah, there's a lot of work to do to get that done. I mean, there's about four or five steps in order to do it. I've thought about a way where you could sell May corn. It's like then May 19 corn closed at 4.10¾. You can buy a July 4.10 call for about 10 cents in 2018. You can sell that, so you've got some protection to the upside. And if you can lock in a 10-cent basis, you can lock in 390 corn right now. Now, you've got pretty good odds that you're still going to have a upward rally and should get some higher prices later on. That's going to depend on several different things. But, I would think it would be a good place to start. But like I said, you just can't just wait and hope for a price unless you get something big or some weather problem to come along to boost these markets.
Yeah, I missed that on Twitter from Ed Essett. Ed Essett, of course, is the grain marketing specialist from the University of Minnesota. Don, why don't you follow up? Does this all make sense to you?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. You know, when you really look at it, what we're really talking about is you really have to merchandise your way out of this market. And I think the producer's been more accustomed here since 2008 with the big price spikes that maybe you could speculate your way out of the market. And so I think we're back to, you know, some of the old merchandising strategies where if you have storage, hopefully you do, or continue to build. I know the Western Corn Belt, a tremendous amount of storage continues to be built, is try to take advantage of the basis narrowing into the spring, try and lock in those carries, and use the distant months. Even 2019, when you look at it, it probably isn't too early to look at that when you can get between 415 and 420 with 413¼ tonight. So if we're back to this era where 450 is a tough marker to get over and $3 is pretty good support, you know, you're in that range is what we think.
Don, a follow-up with you, wondering where the Iowa farmers, at least in your area or where you've traveled, are as it relates to the harvest season here in our part of the world. Things are really wrapping up pretty quickly. How about there in near Des Moines?
Well, you know, I'd say in the Western Corn Belt, for the most part, the soybean harvest is pretty well wrapped up, even in the Dakotas for sure. But I would say just limited soybeans out. The corn guys are aggressively after the corn now. You know, it's been under the five-year average. But in a lot of areas, the stock was cannibalized with the growing conditions this year. So real fear that you could have some yield losses out in the country. So they're pretty aggressive, and they're going to be working night and day.
Hey, and have you heard yields from those areas? And since most of the soybeans are in, how did they finish up? Because it was awfully dry in your state.
You know, it was awfully dry. And I would say the yields were in the northern part of, northeast part of Iowa were disappointing compared to what they thought they were going to get. We just didn't get the rain that you would have anticipated. Could have helped the bean yield jump 5 to 10 bushels just like that. So I would say for the most part, Iowa in summary, disappointing on the yields on soybeans. You get into the Dakotas, and I think it was better than people thought, but we just didn't get the rain. But when you flip it around, the corn yields, for some reason, I think it's the stock was just cannibalized like I was talking. And so the corn yields are coming in better to much better than the guys thought. So I think that's going to lead to next year. Guys planting more corn than soybeans.
Oh, interesting. We'll come back to that. Do you think the November USDA report will have a lower number for Iowa corn or Iowa soybeans and a higher number for corn?
I do. I think, you know, we set the tone, and I think as harvests move through, I think we'll see the soybean yield drop, you know, marginally, and the corn yield go up marginally.
And then in your part of the world where you've traveled and talked with folks out there in the western Corn Belt parts of Kansas, the southeastern or southwestern corner of Iowa, parts of Missouri, Mike, what do you see?
I think the same thing as Don. I think this is where the, and even going back towards your listening area, your AM 580 listening area, Todd, I think the test weights are what I'm getting a lot of feedback from. They're big. They're 60, 61, 62-pound test weights, and this is where the tip back was not an effective yield reducer as far as guys would walk fields or send in their surveys in August and September to me and say, I'm going to barely meet my five-year average, or I'm going to be 5 to 10% below 2015, 2016, maybe more. And it was because of the tip back, and it was because of the late planting, but the test weights are more than offsetting that from the people that I'm talking to that are getting better than expected corn yields. Same and similar thing with the soybeans, a bit of a pullback. However, I will say that several people in this area were pushing 80 bushel whole field yields in soybeans. So I don't think with the cost of production and the basis where it's at right now in corn versus beans, they're both ugly, but corn's a little uglier. I don't think you've got any acreage battle going on in this part of the country yet.
Yeah, and just to double check, so the test weight in this case, because test weight is related to the volume, which is what a bushel is, as opposed to the pounds, I suppose it means they're just harvesting more pounds over that acre more than anything else, but heavy or light doesn't make that much of a difference. And maybe you can tell me that, Mike, or maybe I can get an answer from Brian Stark at the Andersons.
Yeah, I mean, it's a grain fill issue from what they're telling me, and it offsets a lot of the smaller kernels at the ends, whereas the middle part of the ear is very hardy and very big. And I think it also helps offset any kind of moisture issues that they may have been worried about, too.
No, I think Mike covered it fairly well. We've seen the same thing. You know, commercial corn, generally you see the higher test weights in the food grade varieties. But even the commercial corn this year, 59, 60-pound averages, which is a good 2 pounds heavier than what we're normally accustomed to seeing on our receipts. So I think that does have something to do with the better than expected yields for sure. Really, there's no other good explanation given some of the surveys. We're all consistent in our East Central Illinois area with being down 10 to 15%, when in reality, actual yields are probably 7 to 8% lower. So guys are getting better than expected yields, and I think that's, you know, kernel depth, test weight, that has a lot to do with it.
Let's go back to where we came up with this corn yield. USDA had its data users group meeting in Kansas City earlier this week. One of the questions that they were getting, I think fairly often, from the brokers and others who were end users of the data and at the meeting, was why the discrepancy between the August crop production numbers and what the weekly crop progress report was suggesting. Did you hear much about that, and does it make much of a difference? Don, I think I'll start with you.
Well, you know, I think we've got some research, on the crop progress according to the final yields and yields that the government comes up with. And, you know, we always talk about the good to excellent rating, but if you look through the whole thing is what you really have to look at. So I think the government was fairly consistent with the crop ratings when you look through the whole gamut from the good to excellent to poor to very poor to come up with your overall yield. So I guess we weren't hugely surprised that the yield kept, that was a little better than the trade thought and kept going up and expected to still go up.
Brian Stark, you suggested you wanted to focus on revenue per acre. I take it that's because the yields are better than producers thought they were going to have.
They are, and specifically the commodity we focused on is soybeans. The yields in our area have been more comparable to last year. And I think when you think about, you know, where your revenue per acre, and we know it's been really tough to buy corn from the producer at these prices, we kind of have always said, if you're going to make a long bet, don't bet both commodities. And I think you have to look at not just price, but yield production per acre and turn it into a revenue game. So to me, the message I want to get across to the grower is, if you're frustrated with the corn yields and or price, you know, focus on beans. Beans seem to be better than expected, or at least close to last year. And I think where prices are today, 960 beans in that area at 75 bushel the acre is a pretty good rate of return. So that's what we've been trying to push. And I think that's, you know, guys have to focus on that rather than get wrapped up into price forecasting.
Merrill Crowley, this would be not different than most producers have seen the last 3 years. So this would be the fourth year in a row, I suppose, that soybeans might be their better revenue generator than corn on their farms.
Well, currently, that certainly looks like the situation. I mean, and, you know, I can't argue or add a whole lot more to what everybody said at this point. I would like to ask a quick question. So everybody's going to run the carry and look at the basis. I'd like to ask the question, what kind of basis targets are they looking for?
From our perspective, Merrill, I would say that generally speaking, you get 15 to 20 cent basis appreciation coming outside of harvest. And so that's kind of a nominal value. Obviously, Western Corn Belt to Eastern Corn Belt, there's dichotomy in what the basis levels currently are at. A pretty widespread at times. I've heard from some of our guys out west that bean basis at some point was a dollar under. Obviously, we don't have anything nearly that wide in the Eastern Corn Belt. But I think, you know, looking at a nominal 15 to 20% appreciation, I think is something guys can reward. And you generally see that towards the December timeframe. And also what I've encouraged producers to do is look at opportunities if you have storage to move it when the market needs the grain the most. That's generally when you get the biggest bang for your buck in basis. And typically speaking, we know the next heaviest movement outside of harvest is January. So usually when the bin doors shut, the biggest opportunity to see good basis improvement or good bids is December, because a lot of people aren't in the hauling mood between the holidays. So we found over the years that's a great opportunity. Another time is April, May, when people are planning. So you have to be strategic. And I think some of those opportunities, when it's maybe a little more uncomfortable to pull out the truck and haul, is generally the best economic benefit.
I was just going to say, in the Western Corn Belt, the basis levels have, you know, things have changed, and I would say fairly rapidly in the last 3 years. And by that, I mean we have 43 ethanol plants in Iowa. And what has happened is the ethanol plants, of course, they're the huge chugging engines buying corn, you know, daily usage just in a huge amount. And when they first were built, they just built the ethanol plant, and they relied on the farmer storage. Now what they've done is they've increased their storage capacity to 3 to 5 to 6 to 10 million bushels. So they really are using their own corn when it's an advantage to them from a basis standpoint, and they use the producer corn, you know, as the last resort. So it's harder in the last 2 years to get these pushes on basis like you normally would for some of the reasons that, you know, you're talking about, you know, spring rallies, you know, inclement weather. So that's how things have really changed. And I don't know, you know, we've always been big basis traders here in the Western Corn Belt with elevators and such. So it does change that on the corn. From the soybean basis levels, you know, we did in Des Moines, we got at the elevator level, we'll say we got 80, 90 under. Typically, we would bounce back, you know, of course, there's a carry of, 34 cents. So, you know, 90 under is a buck 23 under. We usually would go back in the spring to like 20 under. But I guess I would say this year with the big supplies, maybe more like 30, 35 under.
And only to add to that, I think that what I've heard recently is, you know, using Brian's idea and Don's idea, producers are willing to sell the carry, but they're not willing to buy the call. And I think that's a real dangerous game this year, given that world stocks to use ratios for corn are dropping and we're at 4-year lows right now. And even if the USDA, you know, raises yield incrementally, like we've talked about, we're still probably going to be tighter than what we've been used to the last 3 or 4 years going forward. So I like buying the call and recommending that, with the idea that either the futures is going to go up and you'll be right and make money on the call theoretically, or if the futures goes down, your basis will improve even more than what you had expected. And so you can offset a lot of the call premium and the loss there with a better basis than what you were thinking. So that's something that I'm discussing, you know, with producers right now.
Hey, Don, I want to follow up with you on one item. You suggested that producers for the 2018-19 season might go back to planting more corn in the Western Corn Belt. Certainly, the North Dakota producers responded by planting a whole lot more soybeans this year than they ever have before. That may have been because they have been planting a lot more corn than they ever have, and they found that the rotation was just the best. However, is it for Iowa?
Yeah, you know, I think, Todd, when you look at it, I think it's more about the really good soils, okay? And, you know, not downplaying the Dakotas at all, but what I'm saying is, you know, the input cost on corn is very, very high. And to go to work and get 130 or 140 bushel yield, you know, it's a different ball game. You know, you can plant soybeans much less of a cost, and if you can get, you know, a soybean yield that's pretty respectable, beans look better in those areas. What I'm talking about is in the high-producing corn areas, there's no doubt when you can get, let's just say this last year, the producer in the good areas has been able to, the last 3 years, yield himself out of a catastrophe on the corn. Well, that's not true in beans. I mean, you can go from, you know, a 220, 250 yield on corn, where it's pretty hard to get a bean yield, you know, to go past this last year, 60, 65. You know, of course, obviously, there are some 70s and 80s and all this. So that's all I'm saying is I think for the producer in good areas, he can yield himself out, or he's been able to on corn. So that's what makes me think we're going to see some switching. We'll see as we go forward.
That would be different in the Eastern Corn Belt, Brian Stark. Do you think producers here are more likely to put more beans in? They have. They've already planted, what, 900,000 acres, I think, was one of the first numbers I remember for this year, the change. And they have responded, at least in Illinois, to soybean yields, which are more likely to be in that 70 to 80 bushel range, I suppose, than not. And then they've seen the profits there. Will they plant more bean acres in the Eastern Corn Belt?
I think you're probably looking at least unchanged and maybe slightly more. I tend to agree with that assessment. The last 3 or 4 years, the revenue's been better. We've consistently proven that we can get a good bean yield, 75 to 80 bushel, at least in my territory in East Central Illinois. And I think guys will continue to do it. The one thing that I've heard some producers, not many, just a few, talking about is soybeans after soybeans. And you don't generally see a lot of that, at least in the history of our production, happening. So that'd be kind of an interesting scenario, since we've been so heavy corn for many years, corn after corn, to see how well we could replicate those yields doing that. So worst case scenario, my bias is bean acres are at least unchanged to slightly higher in Illinois.
Specialization driven by economics on both sides of the Corn Belt. Interesting.
This would be something towards that. Bean yield loss is many years ago had a customer doing 5 years in a row, soybean after soybean, because the landlord, that's all he wanted was soybeans planted out on his farm. And he did not see a significant drag on his yields. So it would be interesting to see if that would hold true or not.
Thanks so much. Let's get a final word from each of you. I think Mike Zuzulo, I will start with you today.
We can't have a commodity week and me not talk about wheat, Todd. It'd be like the sun not shining in the daytime. We still have wheat as the major leader. In fact, an attaché report by USDA came out on Thursday afternoon relating to Mexico, and they have reached an agreement to import wheat from Argentina. So we do have wheat and NAFTA still on the radar screen, wheat and inflation. I think wheat is a great indicator to whether you're going to have a low in this market, a trend-type low or not, and that's still the same.
Brian Stark of the Andersons?
I'll focus on safety. I think it's important with about 30% of corn harvest left to go in our area that farmers, as they wind down harvest and get done working long hours for many weeks, that we continue to stay safe and have a safe finish to harvest this season.
Don Rose of U.S. Commodities.
Yeah, you know, I'd less like to conclude by talking about the livestock market, and I think we're an overachiever on both cattle and hogs versus the USDA price targets and versus the supply-demand tables from a price target. So certainly concentrate on some risk management on the livestock and also at the same time cover your usage on the input cost.
And Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities.
I'm going to look more macro basis right now. I think the dollar has switched around and is looking to move higher, but I'm still viewing it in a longer-term downward trend. But it could move up to 97, and this is going to help continue to put pressure on our competitiveness, especially South America. Watch the crude oil prices, because I think as long as they continue to move higher, we're going to see that support corn. And longer term, I still look like these markets are going to move higher. You're just seeing all these little bits and pieces in the longer term supporting investment in commodities.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There you can buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference that's coming up the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving in Normal, Illinois. It's an all-day event. The details are online, again, willag.org, or you can go to farmassetsconference.com. Either way, the tickets are just $35. You can buy them today or call during regular business hours at 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Don Rose from U.S. Commodities, West Des Moines, Iowa, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.